Blog Talk Radio.
This is Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. And let's see, I'm back in New York City. I was going to say it's hot, but yesterday was hot. It's like 90-ish degrees yesterday. I don't know, where is that spring weather? I mean, just didn't get any of it. And, let's see, it's 6 o'clock here on my time. I just finished noshing on some popcorn. Yes, using some butter-flavored olive oil that we'll talk about later. My show today, I got a big show, really big show. On my show today, I have... I do have her, yes. Actually, I think I got them. Do I have the both of them? I think I got the both of them. You know, they sound alike, the both Esther and Eunice. And I promised them I'll take them on my next trip. At least I'll take one of them. Goodness gracious. But right now I think I got one of my cats is right at my feet. They like smelly feet. Even if it does, whether it does. Oh, I have probably smelly slippers. That's what I think they're really hooked on here. Anyway, so we're going to have, Brian Conaw, the manager of the McCormick and Schmicks in Charlotte, is going to talk to us. Because while I was there, I was like wanting to know if you go to different McCormick and Schmicks, is the food the same? The menu, or how does it differ? You know, and of course, we're going to talk about what I ate. Food. And then I have, speaking of food, the olive oil. So when I was in Pinehurst, I went into the village of Pinehurst, and there was this place called Green Gate Olive Oils. And they sell olive oils and balsamic vinegars. We're going to be speaking with the guy who owns the place. My goodness, what a... another thing to drool about. Poor Barbara. If you're listening or when you listen to this one, I hope you got something to nosh on to. Now, then... Town Creek Indian Mound, what is it? Well, we're going to get that. We're going to find out what that exactly is in case we're wondering how long, you know, people have been around. Well, I think they've been around like 10,000 years ago. So we'll get some information on that place. And, then also, when I was in Charlotte, I stayed at the Dunhill Hotel. And so we're going to get, I'm not sure, I'm hoping that the Bellman calls in, because aside from talking about the hotel, it's like, well, if you chat with the Bellman, do you get inside information on the area? So that's the other thing that... that we're going to be doing. But, of course, first, we're going to talk about food.
What would you do to earn brownie points?
How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale. You can get these wonderful brownies on www.brownies.com. Oh, chocolate. Well, I do have some chocolate in the house. I forgot where I went. There was one place I went to, and it was just this, you know, like tchotchke store. And they had these chocolate-covered cocoa beans. Yeah. I mean, at first I thought it was going to be really hard. I guess they do something to soften them up a bit. It's not... as bad as like the nibs. When you have nibs, they tend to be a little more crunchy, harder to chew. And so that's that looks like what we got there. So as I await Brian to call in. Let's see. I don't have a commercial for Ashran. I got to have them give me a commercial. I don't know what their, like, logo kind of thing, or their saying, or, you know, that kind of a thing. I like Ashran, aside from being on time. I like that because I like, the seats are very roomy. I'm not sure if they're doing, you know, like sometimes I get a little mixed up with Ashran and JetBlue as far as, I'm not sure if they both have little televisions in front of you. I like them both. I think I'm going to be taking Ashran next. On my next trip, I'll be Ashraning. And one of the things, JetBlue doesn't have an upgrade. I think, I don't believe they can, you can like pick roomier seats or something like that. You can pick roomier seats. You know, and pay extra. But Ashran has a business class, and what you wind up getting, I mean, it kind of just, I mean, if you're going, if you're not taking a long trip, here's the thing. If you go business class, and I'm not sure how much more it is, but what you have to do is weigh in terms of the, not the carry-ons, but the what you're checking in under the plane, because I think Ashran, like just about everyone, they're charging like $25, like for the first baggage, and I don't know, $35 for the second. I don't know what they're doing, but anyway, what happens if you go business class? You can put two bags under. For free, and then you could still bring a carry-on. So, I mean, if you're traveling like cross-country or something to that sort, that it really pays to do that. And especially now, if you're traveling across the country it also is a great idea. There's a lot of products out there that you can have to, you know, for sleeping. And I have one. It's supposed to make you more comfortable. It's like sort of blow up thing. But I but the that's probably good for the other airlines. Because AirTran and I know JetBlue both have very they have comfortable seats, but you get you know they, no one's doing pillows these days or blankets. So a lot of things that with the companies are selling all kinds of stuff like that for you to nod out on the plane. It's, you know, I, let me start with this. We'll see when he, you know, hopefully he'll call in. Well, what I did is when I was there, we did a tasting. And, the place was a little busy. And so the general manager went back to the kitchen and he cooked everything. He prepared everything. I want him to tell you about how he was able to do that. And although I think, no, I didn't put it up on my blog site yet to see the photos. Of everything we had, well, I guess I will, I may just have to chat about this myself. Okay. Well, for the first thing that came out, and this, I think I'm missing something. There were two things that looked like, okay. There was something with the miso something. Where am I missing something? This is the one. It's a swordfish halibut. Oh, okay. That's the one. That there. Okay. So the first thing that we had a soup. The soup was a crab bisque. Now, the way that they did it is that it's a cream-based bisque. And it's served, like, with white rice and lump crab meat on the top. At the bottom of the bowl, they put a 20-port reduction. Not a lot, just enough kind of for flavor. And so, and then you could see the white rice, the crab on top of that, and then they pour in the bisque itself into it. Oh, God. I'm getting hungry. All right. Then, of course, have to have a salad. The salad, wow. It was a grilled shrimp and fruit salad. So what it had, it was like mixed greens and the baby spinach and was tossed with a fresh pear dressing with dried dates, apricots, and cranberries, and topped with fresh berries too. I think there was blackberries, raspberries, and strawberries. I mean, just picture that. Now I'm telling. Oh, I think. Wait a minute. Am I lucky? Do I happen to have? Do I? No, I don't. Oh, no, it's not him. This poor Barbara. Barbara's going to... I'm describing food to you, Barbara. Get ready. Okay, so after the grilled shrimp and fruit salad, the next thing was swordfish casino. And the swordfish is... They oven roast the swordfish. And then it's stuffed with lump blue crab meat, bacon, roasted red pepper, garlic butter, and panko breadcrumbs. And then this was served on sautéed spinach with a lemon butter and chili oil. that was, well, the chili oil like was like on the plate, just to give it an extra little boost. Then, who was our server? Roxanne Gardner was our server. She was the one who was bringing these things out. Okay. Then it was the wild halibut, the wild versus the tame one. And this halibut, it was halibut and leeks. And it was wrapped in a light phyllo dough and served on a bed of roasted mushrooms with a red wine butter sauce. I hear you drooling. And, okay. Then, of course, going in for more fish, because this is McCormick's and Schmick's seafood restaurant. And all of the fish, by the way, is fresh. Okay. Now, wild chili and sea bass. And by the way, when I use the word wild, that's as opposed to farmed. And the wild is bitter. Okay, the wild chili and sea bass. Well, now, the sea bass is marinated with miso paste and stir-fry sauce, seared and then served on udon noodles and stir-fried vegetables with a side of miso broth. So, in other words, it wasn't sitting, it actually wasn't a side. It was, actually they poured the miso broth once after they did it like the same thing with the soup. After, like, they served it and then just poured the miso broth on it. Yes. I guess along the sides. That's what they did. Okay. Yes, another fish. Yet another fish. Bacon-wrapped scallops. It was three scallops, or scallops, as pronounced, and was wrapped in prosciutto and then seared medium with sautéed spinach, lemon butter, and basil oil, and then topped with what they call sweet potato hay. So, in other words, it was like a extremely crispy and very thin sweet potato on the top of that. By the way, you notice that I didn't, Esther, you notice I didn't have any chicken, right? Oh, okay. Yeah, she was thanking me highly for that. Okay. And now, then came, gotta have dessert. It was a dessert trio. Okay. Well, one of them was a homemade, I don't know which home they made it, but it was homemade ice cream cookie. And you had two chocolate chip cookies with vanilla bean ice cream in the middle. That was one. The second was a Grand Marnier dark chocolate, well, it says like pat, P-A-T-T-E. It's not pate. It's described two pieces of infused pat. I guess it's a sort of pate, the way it came out, true. Served on fresh whipped cream. They make their own. And then the third thing was chocolate mousse and dark chocolate shell. Chocolate. I just got an email from Barbara. It says, no, food, I'm starving. Oh, God. It's Hey, it's only going to be about a, not even a week and a half that I'm going off to meet my crew in Virginia, in Williamsburg. I'm so looking forward to it. So that's the story with what we ate. Now, what I did is I asked Brian about, you know, in terms of how they differ. They do have, like, a lot of things are kind of basic, you know, through the corporation. But what it really boils down to is in terms of the fresh fish that they're getting. And for instance, I forgot the oysters. I forgot we had the sampling of the raw oysters. And I think two or three of them were actually from Virginia. Yes. So I guess we'll be eating raw oysters when we're in Virginia. And so it kind of depends on, it's the chef is that will like tweak up the how he wants to serve the fish, and that's kind of what really kind of makes the difference of where it's locally gotten from. Not that all is local. I mean, you could be getting from a local vendor and it was flown in from, you know, someplace. And that's what it's all about. Yay. Okay. Now that I did his work, I don't know, Brian probably forgot. That's okay. What I'm going to do is as I'm waiting for our next caller. I'm going.
Are you ready for some football?
I'm not sure if I might have talked about the New York Sharks' 100th game that they played. Yes. It made history, the only women's football team in the United States, at least, to play 100 games. Yep. And to commemorate that, the owner, Andrew Douglas, took out her old shoe and put it on and did the kickoff. Just that, nothing else. I would have loved to have seen her actually do one quarterback throwing, and it would have been perfect if, like, she did that, throwing it to Jen Blum, who has been with us since the onset of the New York Sharks as well. And then in the meantime, having Lynn Lewis, who played for the Sharks and is now coaching, have her screaming at the two of them. That would have been just great to videotape that. But, what can you do? I have Andrew practicing and doing the kickoff on YouTube. So that's pretty great. So, I'm going to take a music break. let's see. Let's get something. It's one of my favorites.
She may be the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. my dreams, a smile reflected in a stream. She may not be what she may seem inside her shell.
Notting Hill. Singing. I don't know about everybody else regarding American Idol, but I'm sorry. I think we were ripped off. I mean, Crystal, I'm sorry, was just much better than Lee. He has. I mean, I don't. He may have a voice. He just doesn't have. I wouldn't want to watch him if he was on the stage. There's nothing about him that I would want to watch him, you know, getting into the music. But Crystal, I mean, there's personality in there, and the voice. But we know. I mean, it's the game. It's the game of. You know, the who got more votes, and it's kind of like, okay, what do they do to get people to do more votes? You know, and I think it's a combination of that, and I think because you know, Crystal doesn't dress so conservative, and so what, you know? But I'll tell you one thing: if there was a show, I mean, if then I had a choice between seeing Crystal or Lee, there's no way I'd see Lee. Nothing about him makes me want to see him perform. Maybe I can listen to a record, but that could be the other thing, because he did one of his own songs, and I think that was you know, a whole promotion. You know, you get a PR group behind you, and who knows how you can, you know, make the phone calls to call in and vote and not even get other people to do it. But I don't know. I think it's fixed. But someone did say to me that Crystal might be better off because she wouldn't be there would be less obligations. So anyway, let's get away from that. So we'll go back to the show. And hopefully, do I get Green Gate olive oil? Who do I got on the air? Hello? Green Gate olive oil? Who's this? Who's calling in? Is somebody calling in? don't know, it's got a thing where it said, oh, let me try again. She's probably talking, saying, oh, hello. All right, come on. Come on. Open up this mic here. Come on.
Hello.
I got you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is Keith from Green Gate Olive Oils.
Okay. I'm glad you called in. I would have had somebody call you if you didn't.
No problem.
I wanted to tell you that, well, before, because I don't want to munch on popcorn while I'm on the air, because it's, you know, more of a drier thing.
Right.
But
right.
I tried the butter flavored olive oil with it.
How did it work?
It's excellent. But you know what's interesting about it? My feet are bloating. You know what I mean? Because of the weather. And
right,
because
sure.
of that, I didn't want to put salt.
Right.
And somehow, you know, like when you have butter on it, when you put the salt, it pulls it out even more. But I didn't want
right.
to do that. But still, I still had that buttery flavor.
Great.
You know.
Good. Excellent.
But anyway, so now that everybody, I have one of my crew. I call her one of my crew. Listening to the show and stuff, all I've been talking about is food. So let's continue with it.
Very good.
And what I want you to do is explain, like, well, did you introduce yourself and tell everybody where you are and what you got?
Well, I'm Keith McDaniel with Green Gate Olive Oils in Pinehurst, North Carolina, in the village of Pinehurst, which is the golf capital of this area and region and of the world, really, because we've hosted several U.S. Opens and have the Women's and Men's U.S. Open scheduled for 2014. They will be played consecutively. The Men's Open and the Women's Open will be back-to-back here in Pinehurst in 2014.
Oh, cool.
So we have a shop in the village that sells olive oils and balsamic vinegars that are imported from all over the world, from Greece, Spain, France, Italy, and that's just a few of the countries. There are a couple of other countries.
And even California.
And California, absolutely.
Yeah.
From California. So we get our supplies from a supplier out in California who does the importing for our store and others that are similar. However, ours is the first one in North Carolina. And we have over 40 varieties of oils and balsamic vinegars. The oils, some of them are infused with limes, lemons, and oranges, and you can taste, as I've had people in the shop saying, oh, I can taste the lemon, or I can taste the orange. It tastes exactly like the particular fruit that it's been infused with. We also have oils that have basil, tarragon, garlic, chipotle, almost any flavor you can imagine. We have an oil that is reflective of that. We even, as you are talking about the butter olive oil that you popped your popcorn in, that has been very popular. People use it to drizzle over baked potatoes, mashed potatoes, and anything that you would typically use butter in, you can use the butter-flavored olive oil. And it does not contain butter. It is butter-flavored, which means that it's much healthier for you than butter.
Nah. Well, now, before we go into the balsamic vinegars, I want to have you explain to people the way you have the setup. It's not like sometimes people go to like Williams Sonoma, and you
right.
go and you know you could pour it on a little and drizzle it onto a piece of
right.
bread.
Right. In fact, I had someone in the shop just today who had worked at Williams Sonoma for a year. And she was commenting about the setup of the shop and the way it's displayed and the ability anyone who comes in the shop is able to taste every single one of our oils or our vinegars. There's a tap on these stainless steel containers that are called Fusti's, F-U-S-T-I. They're imported from Italy, and they have a spout with a turn on the top where you just turn the spout, and you can take a little cup and let the oil drip into the cup. I understand that in Italy, where they have tastings, they use a small spoon. and give you a taste on a spoon. But we have small cups that we allow people to drop the oil into and or the vinegars, and then to either dip bread in, or really the best way to taste is just to take a sip, particularly with the oils and their various flavor combinations. You really get a true taste by just taking a sip of the oil.
And I understand there's a proper way to taste it.
Right, is you take one of the cups, you would put it in the palm of your hand and put your other hand over the top of the cup, give it just a few seconds, 15, 20 seconds, to let the body temperature warm up the oil so that it brings out the flavor in the oil, and then you would take it and almost do like a into your mouth as if you were sipping coffee or a good wine or something of that nature, and that really pulls the flavor into your throat and gives you that real good full mouth flavor.
So in other words, what you're saying is you're kind of pulling air into your mouth at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Pulling air in and allowing you to really get the full flavor. Absolutely.
Okay. And then what happens after you, like, what happens when you choose a the one you want? They're not already bottled, are they?
No, they're not already bottled, and we've refrained from doing that. Some shops will pre-bottle, even though they're obviously taking the oils from the taps, as we do, and they'll pre-bottle to cut down on time and that sort of thing. But we don't like to do that. We don't want to do that. We want to be able to take a bottle, put it up to the tap of the Fusti, turn on the tap, and let the oil run into the bottle or the vinegar as the person is standing there watching the process happen. And once we get the bottle full, then we put a very tight cork into the bottle, and then there's a gold seal that goes over the bottle, just like a seal that you would find on a wine bottle or a bottle of olive oil you might find in the grocery store. We use a heat gun that shrink wraps that seal onto the bottle, and it's just like you would have gone into a wine shop or a grocery store, purchased a bottle of oil or a bottle of wine. It's sealed just that way.
Right. That's pretty cool. Does they come? Do they come in all different sizes or one?
There
size?
Are different sizes. The predominant size that we sell is 375 milliliters, or about 12 and a half ounces.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a 200 milliliter bottle that we will sell to people if they want a large variety of oils or vinegars and they want to sample various ones, then we'll get a 200 milliliter bottle and fill those for them. And just today, actually, I got in a new shipment of oils and vinegars, and I requested they ship me some of the larger bottles. So we now currently have a 750 milliliter bottle, which is the size of a wine bottle, that we can also bottle the oils or vinegars in if someone wanted a larger supply. And I had a guy in the shop today who has been in probably four different times since we opened, and he saw one of the larger bottles sit on the back of the counter, and he said, "Do you have that size bottle in now?" I said, "We just got it in today." He says, "That's the size I'm going to be buying from now on," which was pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, well, I don't blame him.
And the other thing, Meryl, let me tell you this. I had a lady in today from Italy. She lives in Rome. And, of course, you know, Italy has all the oils and all of that sort of thing. I mean, we get some of our oils from Italy. But she purchased one of the balsamic vinegars today, and she says, I'm taking this back to Italy with me. And I said, "You've got to be kidding." She said, "No." She said, "I live in Rome, and I'm going to take this back with me."
Wow.
So I was very impressed with that.
I don't blame you. I mean, that's did you know which kind she took, by the way?
I'm trying to remember. It seems as though it was one of the white balsamics, and it may have been the honey ginger balsamic, which we carry. And she just kept going on about the taste of that, and she says, "I'm taking a bottle of that back with me." So I said, "Great."
Now, let's get into the balsamic vinegars, of what,
okay.
what kind of things you have. You know, I mean, I think especially, I mean, oils I know that, you know, that of being infused, I've never really seen that many or any.
Well, And if I remember correctly, when you came into the shop, you said, now, I'm not really a vinegar person, and I'm probably not
going
to taste any of the vinegars. And then before you left, you had tasted several of them, and I think even took a couple with you. So we have probably 20 or more varieties of balsamic vinegars, ranging from blueberry, strawberry. We even have a dark chocolate vinegar that's gone very well. And when people see that, it's almost like it's a novelty item. You know, oh, I've never seen anything like this. I have to taste the dark chocolate. And so it's really good to drizzle over any fruits or tomatoes, any ice cream, and you don't have to do anything to it, poached pears, anything. You just drizzle it over it. But what I did with the dark chocolate balsamic a few nights, last week actually, is I marinated a pork tenderloin in the dark chocolate balsamic. And I marinated it for about a half a day. I cooked it that night. And then I did a reduction with the dark chocolate olive oil, the dark chocolate balsamic. And once I had the reduction where I wanted it, then I sprinkled that over the pork after I sliced it. It was amazing. It was wonderful. Last night I used the blueberry balsamic and marinated pork chops and cooked those after it had been marinating for about a day. I seared them first on the top of the stove, and then I put them in the oven for 20 minutes on 350. And they were tender, juicy, and you had that slight blueberry flavor to it. It was amazing.
Wow, I haven't done all that. I just got the, since I didn't bring them home. I had to have tourism ship it to me.
Right, sure, absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't recommend people try to take these on an airplane, because we'll ship, and within about 2 weeks, people can go online to greengateoliveoils.com, and they'll be able to order, and we'll ship it to them right off of the website. There's a full description of all of the oils and vinegars on the website, as well as recipes and the various health benefits of olive oil.
That's really great. So just to get an idea of a basic, basic price for the small one, I'll call it small, medium, and
the
large.
Exactly. The small ones run around $9.50. For most of the oils and most of the vinegars, although some of the vinegars will range for the 375 milliliter, they will range around $15, $12.50, $11.95 for some of the vinegars. All of the oils except the blood orange, lemon, and lime, those run $16.99 for a 375 milliliter bottle. And the roasted French walnut olive oil, which is just amazingly delicious, runs $19.99 for a 375 milliliter bottle. The smaller bottles that are the 200 milliliter run around $9.50.
Right. I want people to also to understand if they're going, yeah, but I can get Calavita olive oil for $6 on sale. No.
Right.
you're not getting anything the same.
Well,
no comparison.
People, when they taste this, say, oh, I've got to go home and pour out all my olive oils, or I've got to get rid of what I have because what these oils and vinegars do to salads is just, I had a lady the other day who said she took some for a dinner she went to, and they did the oils and vinegars, mixed them with the salad, and she said the salads were the hit of the meal. They said everybody loved the salad most of all.
You know, I have to tell you, and I'm going to try some of these, the combinations. I may turn vegetarian.
You almost could because of the
salad.
The depth of the flavors in salads.
Yeah, I don't want to chew meat right now or something.
Right.
Like that.
I told my wife the other night, or shortly after we had opened the shop, I said we'll never buy salad dressing in the grocery store again. There's no need to. You can't compare it. You can't beat
nothing.
It.
No comparison.
And as healthy as it can be. So.
And no comparison. Well,
yeah, no.
The next thing I want to get into about it is, before we get into recipes, I want to kind of get into, your ideas of the combinations of a salad oil and a balsamic vinegar.
Of our most popular combinations has been the Tuscan olive oil. I'm sorry, the basil olive oil and the red apple balsamic vinegar. I don't know what it is about those two combinations that works, but it is just makes an amazing salad dressing.
So it's red apple and basil.
Red apple and the basil flavored olive oil. Another one that's been very popular, which has surprised me, is the chipotle olive oil and the jalapeno white balsamic vinegar.
I can imagine someone who wants the hit of that spiciness.
Right, and
yes.
I was reluctant to put those two together until I had a young guy in there a week or so ago, and he said he really liked hot stuff, and I was going to pair the chipotle with one of the fruit vinegars. And I said, but, you know, let's just try this with the jalapeno. I've been thinking about it, but I was afraid to do it. I was afraid it would be too much heat. And I paired that chipotle with the jalapeno vinegar, and it was wonderful. It was not too strong. It had that little bit of heat, but the vinegar cuts some of the heat of the olive oil.
Right.
So it just makes a wonderful blend, and it has still a little bit of heat, but it's not overpowering, and you get some of the sweetness of the jalapeno vinegar.
Wow. Now, I'm thinking about, but I don't know what to put it on. I'm thinking about pairing the blood orange with the chocolate vinegar.
Oh, I think that would be very interesting. I think you could use that on a salad. I think you could use that, again, on fish or blood
well,
orange.
Actually, I don't know. Like, there was a thought, and I'm not going to make ice cream, putting it on fruit, on a dessert kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's what I would do, I think, with that, is use it on a fruit or on a dessert type dish.
Salad dressing, because I think, I mean, I know I like the taste of orange and chocolate.
Yes, and that's what you would get. You would get the orange and the chocolate. I mean, they even sell those. Well, they sell them around Christmas time, the orange with the chocolate covered coating on them. I don't know what they're called, but so you're right on target. Just add your blood orange and your chocolate, and you're gonna. I'm gonna as soon as I get to the shop tomorrow, I'm gonna.
You gotta try that. See how the two of them taste together.
I'm gonna definitely do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great combinations that you can try.
And
you know, on your website, you should put something, you know, in terms of people sending in recipes.
Absolutely, and we've said, as long as they don't get their recipes out of a cookbook, you know, with copyright and all those kinds of issues, obviously, but if they have their own recipe they've put together, if they will send that to us, to our website, we will display that recipe and put their name on it. So we encourage people to do that, and we hope some of your listeners will.
Yeah, I may do that, too.
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
Which also brings me to a whole nother thing about storage. Now, I mean, here I now have, you know, I have two, well, balsamic vinegars you don't have to really worry about, right? It's the oil.
Right, and you really don't have to worry about the oils. They will keep in the bottle for 18 months to 2 years just sitting on your kitchen counter. You don't have to refrigerate. You don't have to, you know, keep them in any kind of special container. Keep them in the bottles they're purchased in. And just don't put them near the stove or a heat source, because that's where you really get the distortion in the flavor. But just keep it on the counter or in your cupboard, in your cabinet, pantry, where have you, and you're good to go for anywhere from 18 to 2 years.
Oh, good.
Although I'm sure these will not last that long when you're
Well, because what I want to do is I'm saying, I don't know if I should open all these up so I can taste.
Definitely do that.
Because
the corks are very tight, very sealed, and you're going to be in very good shape.
Oh, goodness gracious. I will, you know, try something this evening. I'm going to make a salad. I already got what I'm putting in the salad. I have some arugula, and I want to put in some fresh goat cheese and pomegranate seeds.
Yes. Yes, and we
now I have to figure out which
balsamic vinegar. Yeah.
Yeah, which things would work.
Yeah, and just, you know, it, just as we did in the shop, take just a little bit of each one you think might work, mix it up, you know, just a small amount, and taste it and say, is that going to work on this? And then, you know, the one that really speaks to you, just use that on your arugula and your goat cheese, and you'll be ecstatic.
I'm thinking of combining the lemon oil and the blueberry balsamic
excellent
vinegar.
Excellent combination. Excellent. I mix that in the shop quite frequently, and people love that. Yeah.
Wow.
The lemon oil and the blueberry is a great combination.
I'm telling you, that's really. So you said you'll be able to, in a couple of weeks, you'll be able to ship it. People
right,
can order
absolutely.
And have it shipped.
People can just go online and place their order just like they would on any online merchant, and we'll ship it right to them.
Did we talk about what your website is?
It is www.greengateoliveoils.com.
Okay.
And go on and check it out. If they can't wait till we get online to ship, they can call the numbers on the website, and we'll take their order, take their credit card, and we'll ship it out just within a day or two.
That's absolutely fabulous. I can't wait to play with it all. And it's funny, like, you would think a pork chop, well, I guess a pork chop works because it's a, you know, the other white meat, so
right,
to speak.
Exactly.
But to me, it's like you can do so much with chicken. That's the thing I like about chicken. You
right,
can do
absolutely.
So much with it.
Right.
And what I'm going to do, actually, is, and I bought a whole chicken, and I usually just like roast the whole thing. But
right.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to cut up the chicken, and in different, I'm going to marinate it, like cook it in different progressions.
Well, and there's actually, Meryl, if you want to check it out, and I don't know that you'd want to necessarily do it, and I can't remember exactly which oils and vinegar it talks about, but there's a whole chicken recipe on our website, and it talks about the oil and the vinegars to mix and to rub the chicken with.
Yeah.
We did it. We had not done it with a whole chicken. We did it with chicken breast a couple
uh-huh.
of weeks ago, and it was very, very good. So check that out and see if you think
oh,
that
sure.
might work. But otherwise, I think what you're talking about doing would work just equally as well.
Yeah, this is good food.
Well, you certainly made me hungry.
And Barbara, too, who's listening. Who's
okay, great.
Say
great,
hello to
great.
Say hello to poor
hey, Barbara.
I know she's listening.
Okay, great. I'm
all right, well,
listening.
I really appreciate you calling in. I'll be getting in touch with you again.
That sounds great.
Probably
thank
just
you
when
so
I
much
when
for,
I write up this article, you know.
That would be great, and thanks so much for coming in and visiting our shop and for allowing me this time on your show. And
oh, sure.
Best to you, and we'll be in touch.
Okay.
All
take
right.
You,
thanks
take
so much.
Have a great evening.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye. Yes. Doesn't that all sound yummy? Yummy, yummy, yummy. Wow. Oh, God. All right. I need to have, I just need, like, to get some water. So, let's see. Oh, God. And notice, it's the song I'm about to play. It's the first two words.
Short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new told lies, with supreme visions of lonely tunes. Somewhere something there is a rush of greatness whom no
I love the show Hair. I really do. It's doing well. I was hoping to see the new cast, but, well, I'm not on the A-list, so I don't get to have tickets to see it. But I'll push it anyway. It's one of those, don't miss it on Broadway. You know, it's really good. And so what we got here? Who's, our next caller should be the Town Creek Indian Mound. And, well, they have a whole minute to go. My God, it's a minute until Monk. I watch reruns of Monk. Anytime Monk is on, I'm Monked out. It's like when Monk is on, it's like, there's nothing else on. Or sometimes I look and see what's on and go, there's shit on TV. You know, with all the channels, there's crap. Good, Monk is on. I'll watch Monk. Yeah. So, anyway, Esther, how you doing? Really? You're kidding. Well, she just said that that my cats just went out to take a walk. They almost left the house. I saw them. I was doing some work, and one of them actually walked out the door and then immediately ran back in. I'm so glad. I don't want my cats to go outside and get germies, you know. I think we're ready now. Are we ready now to talk about Town Creek Indian Mound? Is that who I have?
That is who you have. My name is John, and I'm a historic interpreter there.
The historic as opposed to hysteric, huh?
Absolutely, but sometimes I can be hysteric, too. It just, or hysterical.
Okay. what I want you to do is, first of all, where is this place located?
We are in the state of North Carolina, just outside of a little town called Mount Gilead, down in Montgomery County.
Okay. Now, what's it all about, Alfie? What's it all about?
Well, we are about archaeology. Basically, we are a pre-contact American Indian site, and that's what we focus on is the pre-contact history of the American Indians. It's interesting because for most Americans, when we think of history, we just kind of automatically default to a European history because that's what we're taught when you think 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. But there were people that lived on this side of the world prior to 1492, and they do have a history, although it's not documented. Archaeologists and anthropologists can come in and do their work, and they can give you a pretty good idea about what life is like. We're what an archaeologist would refer to as a Mississippian village site. When we say Mississippian, we don't mean Mississippian tribe. Mississippian is more of a culture as defined by an archaeologist or an anthropologist.
Right.
So they built platform mounds, which is what we have. It's a platform mound. We've got three buildings there that you can tour through. We have a stockade. You go through the North Tower. And what people should keep in mind when they come out to our site is that although you're only seeing three buildings there, we know for a fact that there was 42 structures in there. So, I say that because a lot of people don't think of the Indians as having, you know, really big countries and well-defined cities, but that's entirely not the case. But we know that, several hundred years prior to contact, they did have big civilizations, and we are part of what was once probably a pretty great civilization that extended from the Great Lakes all the way down to the Gulf Coast. And about every state between Illinois and Louisiana, just like North Carolina, has a state-run site like us.
Wow. Do you think they moved away because... because we went there and said, get out of here, we'll shoot you?
No. In fact, and this is pretty consistent with a lot of the Mississippian sites. What they're finding is that the Mississippian sites were abandoned several hundred years prior to European contact, which is considered to be generally 1492. What drove them away and what extinguished the culture, it's hard to say. It could have been a lot of different things. It could have been a collapse in their leadership. It could have been, overuse of their resources and eventually depleting them. Maybe a little bit of both. It's really hard to say. Without there being somebody to talk to, you can't get really detailed information like that.
Right. Do you think it's a sense of the American Indians like moving on to another place as opposed to everybody just, dying?
Oh yeah. Well, for sure they went on and moved somewhere else and probably adopted other cultures other belief systems and whatnot. And we know that even after 1492, that there were folks that were still using the site, although there were no buildings on it anymore. The mound certainly would have been there, and other people who were in the area, in the 1600s and 1700s. And when I say people, I mean Indians who would have been in the area. Surely would have recognized that their ancestors were using that area and probably buried a few people in there. There's a few PD culture burials that are actually outside of the stockade. So sporadically, it was probably used from time to time, although it was not a major village center like it would have been, say, 800 to 1,000 years ago.
Well, kind of explain to us, what you would see in each of those three buildings.
Okay. Well. First off, we have a movie. It's about 18 minutes long. We have a museum, which we do have artifacts that were recovered from the site itself. Not all of the artifacts, but just a sampling, maybe 1%, maybe not even that. Then when you go outside, the first thing you'll encounter is the stockade. It's a big wall. Some people call it a palisade, but it's a big wall. You'll go through what we call the North Tower, which is the entrance. And once you get inside, it's basically what you'll see is this big open expanse. There will be three structures there. To your immediate right, you'll see a round building, which we call the Deer Lodge. It's formerly known as the Burial Hut. And we know that there were 10 buildings like that within the stockade. There were about 10 buildings. There were approximately 5 down on the south side and 5 of them up on the north side within that stockade. And so going into that building, what you would see is an audiovisual display of an American Indian funeral that takes place prior to European contact. So roughly about 600 to 800 years ago. Then you could either go up from the Deer Lodge, you could either go up the mound and into the townhouse, or you could go to the East Lodge. But in the townhouse, what you would see is just a little table there. We do have a little bit of black drink on the table, but we don't recommend that you drink it, of course, because it's probably pretty toxic because of its age. It's probably got a lot of bacteria that lives in there. But we have a sprig of yopon up there, which is how they made the black drink, and we have a conch shell up there, which is probably how they consumed the black drink. On the walls, you'll see animals. Now bear in mind that we don't have any clue of what they really had up on the walls. That's just an interpretation of what may have been up on the walls, because these buildings weren't there. Even probably in 1492, those buildings had been abandoned for so long that they had pretty much fallen apart, completely decomposed. So it's just an interpretation what's on the walls. But there are animals up on the walls, painted up there. There's a beaver and a wolf and a bear and a deer. In the East Lodge, you can actually really get a feel for how these buildings were actually constructed. On all the other buildings, we have concrete for the daub, just because that's a little bit more permanent, and we don't have the manpower to do the maintenance on a real daubed wall, a real mud wall. In the East Lodge, you can actually see what a real mud wall would have looked like, because that's what we use is real mud from that geographic area. So it's pretty accurate, probably, to what the Indians would have had, because that's all they would have had to use as well.
So actually, what everybody is seeing is reconstruction.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah, yeah. Everything is reconstructed. The stockade is reconstructed, and the three buildings are reconstructed as well. Those are not really the buildings that the American Indians built when they lived there on that site. Our site was abandoned probably several hundred years prior to European contact. So everything, wood, all that stuff, it doesn't last over time. So just when it gets weathered and stuff, it tends to decompose rather quickly. So yeah, it's all the reconstruction. So when you go there, if anybody goes from this interview, just know that the stockade that you see that surrounds the village site that you see today is the smallest of five that we know about. Okay, so the city itself was once much, much bigger. And what you see when you're in the stockade is actually the smallest ring. Okay, right. There are four other stockade rings that get increasingly bigger that we know about. And there were 42 structures in that stockade. So who knows how many structures there would have been, in the big stockade ring.
Right.
Probably double that, though.
Well, I was reading something that they got to find out that actually American Indians were there like 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, probably a lot longer than that. We know because we found some of their tools. We found some of their artifacts by way of projectile points. Previously, and when I say previously, 2 years ago, a Hardaway projectile point would have been about the oldest projectile point that anybody had found there, any of the archaeologists had found there. The Hardaway era is 10,000 BC. That's definitely back in the Paleo-Indian time period. Well, archaeologists came last June, so about a year ago. Archaeologists from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Eastern Carolina University came out, and they did a dig, and they actually dug up a Clovis projectile point, which that's pretty impressive. Those are believed to be the oldest projectile points on this side of the world.
Wow. Now, what do you have what can people, like, see in the museum itself? Like, what kind of artifacts and...
Well, we have projectile points from about every time period for the projectile points that they found at the site, which pretty much covers it all from the Paleo all the way to the Woodman time period. We have several burial urns, which are big. It's basically pottery. They're big clay pots, which were used as urns. That's how they buried their children at our site. They buried them in vessels. So we have some of those in there. We have some jewelry, shell. Okay, that's what they were making their jewelry out of. Some copper and some shell ornaments. And so we had some of those. Although the plant fiber or sinew that they used to hold their jewelry together had long decomposed. You still find the shell. In a burial, you find the shell, or you find the stuff that stays for a long time.
Mm.
There are various exhibits about their culture, about the black drink, and about the game that they played called Little Brother of War. We have a piebald deer in there that you can take a look at. That's a deer that kind of wants to be an albino. It's genetically mutated, so it has a lot more white on it than you would see on a typical adult deer. We have a gift shop, which is a hit with the kids. The kids love it. Lots of candy, but lots of cheap toys, lots of cheap American Indian type stuff for kids, souvenirs type stuff. But then we also have stuff for adults in the gift shop. Jewelry, native made pottery. We even have some native made tools in there, spears and dance sticks and whatnot.
Well, in terms of like native made, where are they from? What the?
Some of the ones that we have are local, and we know them personally. Others, like Sunni made, that's from Arizona.
Uh-huh.
But traditionally, if they say it's native made, it pretty much has to be native made. They have to have a number and that goes along with it and whatnot, so it's authentic. But, you know, I keep in mind, like, some of the stuff, like, there are some things there that are just, you know, souvenirs. Like, we have these little mini bison that they cost 50 cents. Those are not native-made.
Right.
Native-themed, but not native-made.
How long have you been working there, by the way?
I've been there for just over close to 2.5 years.
And I'm curious, what made you want to work there? It's so out of the way, too. There's nothing
around. Yeah, I'm an old tour guide from New Orleans. That's where I learned how to give tours and do interpretive work. So when I moved to North Carolina, my wife was getting ready to have a baby and didn't want to raise a child in New Orleans or really anywhere else. She's from here, so we moved up here, and the rest is history.
And history is history. That's
yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Wow. So, and did it take you like long to learn the whole everything?
Yeah. I guess it took me. I've learned it. You know, as about how the average person would have learned it. You know, I'm pretty good at memorizing material, and then you know delivering it like I'm just saying it. So you know, it took me probably 2 or 3 months to be able to give a tour, a complete walking tour of the village site itself.
Right.
And we also do hunting tool demonstrations as well.
We do.
Which, yeah. We do hunting tool demonstrations. All you really have to do is request it. We can take you through about 15,000 years worth of hunting technology in about 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow. I should have done that when I was there.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's what stands out, especially to the kids. You know, sometimes when we get the school groups, if they're not, you know, if they're not really with you, or, you know, if they're, you know, looking around, had too much Mountain Dew or Coke or whatever, when
yeah,
you
right.
do the hunting demonstration for them, that gets their attention real quick.
Yeah, because it's participation.
Yes. Well, they don't participate, but they actually
yeah,
get still working, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of other than looking at
mm-hmm.
something.
Yes, absolutely. It's fun. It's fun. It doesn't seem educational, although it is. You know, it just doesn't seem, it seems more fun to them.
Yeah.
By
the way, is there any Native Americans in North Carolina at all?
Oh yeah. You have lots of American Indian groups in North Carolina. The Cherokee are probably the biggest federally recognized group here in North Carolina. But you have American Indians here that represent just about any groups that you would find in the Southeast.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's not a lot of American Indians in the area where Town Creek is today in the Mount Gilead area. I mean, I'm sure that there's a few, but there's not a lot of like groups. I think the biggest group that we have is the Lumbee, and they're from Lumberton, which is pretty close to Fayetteville.
Oh, okay. Oh, now that I think about it, with the Cherokee, I remember there was something. I guess there's a casino up toward
mm-hmm.
Greensboro, maybe. In that area?
It's a little bit further to the west. It's a little bit further
okay.
to the west, a little bit closer to the mountains. But, yeah, they do. That's Cherokee. There's a town called Cherokee, and that's where the reservation sits over by the town of Cherokee.
Okay. Yeah, because I do remember when I went to, there was a North Carolina event that they had in New York, and I remember that. So that's one more place I need to go. In
absolutely.
North Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you enjoyed your trip down here.
Oh, I certainly did. I mean, it was a whirlwind trip. And how far are you from Pinehurst, would you say, by the way?
I would say probably about an hour, maybe a little less.
Okay, because one of the things that's nice about as people go to the Pinehurst Resort is they can they give them people a car for 3 hours to just drive around.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's
they could easily probably make a trip out to Town Creek. But we do get people from Pinehurst out there. In fact, I believe that just today we had some people from Pinehurst out there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's interesting because it's not such a common place, but you have to want to know,
mm-hmm.
like whether this
mm-hmm.
existed or not. I think that's as opposed to, you know, let's go there and we're going to play some games, or you know what I mean.
Yeah, honestly, I think that when people come out to the site, that they are pleasantly surprised at the beauty and even the implications the Town Creek experience kind of makes you have. I mean, just like, you know, with there's this big mound there, and you know, it's obviously a very small part of a much larger culture, a much, you know, larger civilization. And you know, if I had a dime for everybody who came out to Town Creek Indian Mound and thinks that that's the only mound that exists anywhere, I'd be a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have to work there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess it's good that I do, because I get to tell those people that, you know, they're all over the place. This is a pretty widespread tradition.
That's great. That's a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
How, by the way, and how far are you from town, so to speak?
We are about 5 miles outside of the town of Mount Gilead. So we are kind of in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know, there's our site, and then there is there's farmland and, you know, bean fields and cornfields and stuff like that. So, you know, which is kind of cool, because, you know, they're still using that land for the same things today as they were, you know, the people who were living in the area, you know, 3,000 years ago were using it for.
Cool. Is there like anything in, like, well, I mean, I saw that you, in terms of, you have like vending machines kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if
mm-hmm.
somebody wants to have something to eat, don't expect to eat there.
No. We don't serve food. You can, however, bring a picnic lunch. We
that
have
was
18
the question,
oversized
yes.
picnic tables. Yep, we have 18 oversized picnic tables, a beautiful picnic area. If you don't want to bring a picnic lunch, Mount Gilead, like I said, is 5 or 6 miles away, and there are a number of restaurants in the town of Mount Gilead that you can go to. And Albemarle is about a half hour, 45 minutes away, and that's a little bit bigger of a town. They've got stuff out there as well.
Okay. That noise was because I had to put you on speakerphone because I have one of the old portable phone thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and what do you call it? And the battery was running. So now you're on speakerphone.
All right. All right, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I really appreciate your calling in.
Yeah.
Quite interesting.
We appreciate the publicity. Thank you very much for having us on your show. And to anybody who's listening, come on out to Town Creek Indian Mound. We'd love to have you. We're open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, and we are closed on Mondays. But we will be open this weekend. If anybody's wondering, we are open Saturday and Sunday, and again, we're closed on Mondays. So that is typically the schedule.
Do you have a website?
We sure do. I don't know what it is exactly, but if you Google search Town Creek Indian Mound, you'll probably come up with a lot of stuff. We are on Facebook as well. We have a page on Facebook. So, we do have a pretty good internet presence.
Okay. Oh, I just found it. It's www.towncreek@nc, which stands for North Carolina, NC Historic Sites, sites.org.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's it, right there.
And
that
course,
is our site.
And if you forget, you just Google the name.
Exactly. Well, that's what I do.
Okay. All right,
that's what I do.
Thank you a whole bunch for calling in again.
All right, yeah, thanks for having us on the show. Appreciate it.
Okay, have a great evening.
All right, you have a good evening as well. Bye now.
Bye. Yes. Yeah. that kind of history I kind of like because it's, you know, it's different. It's a bit different. It's another break time, you know?
Music. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. And I know, I know. Sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's this house, just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
Sunshine, that's also from, yes, Notting Hill as well. I think it looks like, I thought I heard a clap of thunder. Yes, thunder, it's got the clap. I hope it ain't going to interfere in the show. But, we'll see. So, let me tell you about, next week, I'm still going to have one more show to do next week before I go to, I got up very early this morning, before I go to Williamsburg, and I'll also be going to, Virginia Beach as well while I'm down there. Yeah. So next week, let's see. I'll have to check out to see what I have to do. I have a book that I have to read. The book is, let me get this here. The book is called Iron Butterflies by Berut Regine, and it's women transforming themselves and the world. And from what I got, she did a lot of interviews with women who, you know, made transformations, I guess, who made a difference in the universe, I suppose, if you want to call it that. Andra Douglas is in this. And of course, you know, I will talk about how she got a hold of Andra. And that's one of the things, hopefully, that I can read this for next week and do that. Also, next week, I will be going to a spa in Manhattan, Southies, I think, Sothys, for a facial, I had already gotten something else there. So that'll be kind of cool. That's what I think so far those two probably will be for next week. But back to the show today. I think I have Dunhill Hotel calling in, do I?
You do. Hi, Merle. How are you?
Oh, just fine.
It's Craig Spitzer, the general manager of the Dunhill Hotel down here in Charlotte.
Okay, so I didn't get the bellhop, huh?
No, Anthony was unable to make it. He sends his love and his regards from the Queen City, but unfortunately he asked me to stand in for him as he's off helping guests as we speak.
Okay. So first, let's go into the Dunhill Hotel itself. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, the Dunhill is Charlotte's oldest hotel and the only member of Historic Hotels of America here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Originally built in 1929, it was the Mayfair Manor at that time. Very prominent local architect, Lewis Asbury Jr., designed the property for some prominent doctors here who opened what was a 50-room hotel with 50 apartments. So you can imagine that we now have 60 hotel rooms, and there were at one point 100 units in this building, 50 were for permanent residents. I can only assume that meant a shared bath on each hall to allow for that much space.
Yeah.
Over the years, the Mayfair Manor did quite well. It opened in the Depression. It opened in November of 1929. And it eventually, as a lot of Charlotte's uptown did, fell on hard times in the 60s and 70s. And ultimately went out of business. Some insightful developers bought it in the late 80s, put some good money into it to convert it into a 60-room boutique property. The only problem was that these guys knew how to design it but didn't know how to run it. So about 18 months later, they went bankrupt. And that was the good fortune of Summit Hospitality, the current owner. Doyle Parrish and his partner Gene Singleton are developers and hoteliers, so they knew what they were doing once they acquired this great property on the corner of Tryon and 6th, and began the new and really improved Dunhill Hotel, and the one that's still going now nearly 20 years later, or over 20 years later. So the ownership group that purchased the hotel, I believe it was 1991, is now still here, and we're doing quite well, and very happy about it.
Well, tell us one of the things. One of the things I like about the hotel has, it's so cute, is the taxi cab.
Yeah. We have one of the few authentic London cabs here in the United States, so. We own our own London taxi. It's a beautiful black cab with our Dunhill logo on the side, and we offer our guests a complimentary in-town shuttle. So Uptown Charlotte is it's about a loop in and around the city that's about a 1.5-mile radius. So we'll go to the train station or down south to where the NASCAR Hall of Fame just opened, and kind of all points in between, so folks can make their way around town in style in our London taxi.
That's cool. Yeah, I know, like what, I mean, I walked, we walked over to McCormick and Schmick's, but then we said, let's have the taxi pick us up.
Yeah, it's a great convenience. What we try to do, and I think we do well, is create a unique experience for our guests here, and that extends not just to where they lay their head, but the overall experience here in Charlotte. So by extending our reach and being able to pick them up or drop them off and carry them away in the London taxi, it really, I think, enhances the overall experience in Charlotte.
Do people take advantage of getting drunk and then have a taxi to go back in?
Charlotte does have some good nightlife. It does indeed. So sure, fortunately it's a very walkable city, so a lot of folks, like you, a lot of folks will walk to their destination, and then once they've had dinner or some drinks, decide to call us for a ride back.
Do you have any funny stories or anything that stands out about somebody using the taxi? by any chance?
Gosh. You know, Merle, I don't know, but I'm, as I may have mentioned when we spoke, I'm relatively new on property here.
Ah,
I've been working working with Summit in our corporate offices back in Raleigh for the last year. So my my time on property is all of the last 4 weeks or so. So I can't say that anything funny's happened in the last 4 weeks, but I'm sure over the years we've had some unique experiences there.
And the taxis, are they like driven like the bellhops? Will you do them?
Yeah, the bell staff, our front desk staff as well, is all insured and certified. We have a driver's test that we have our team members go through before being certified to drive, and they provide that service. So really, it's whoever's the bellman is our first option, and if they're not available, the front desk staff or even myself will get behind the wheel and go bring someone back from where they are. A lot of wedding nights, a lot of brides and grooms like to be either dropped off or more often picked up after their wedding and brought back to the Dunhill for their wedding night in the penthouse.
How late would you actually run? I mean, is it 24 hours?
No, by design, we run till 11 unless special arrangements are made. So typically for wedding nights, we make arrangements with either the bride and groom, or actually just yesterday I spoke to a best man whose list of responsibilities was to make arrangements for transportation. So since it goes after our designated time, we've given them the opportunity to make arrangements to have them picked up.
So it's not like you could stay out till 2 o'clock in the morning and then, let me call that cab and I'll go back to Dunhill and...
If you make arrangements ahead of time, we might be able to do it. But we in order to maintain our service levels on property, we need to maintain two people on property at all times. And after 11, typically in a hotel of this size, we'll go down to just a guest service representative and a bellman. So if I send one off property to drive, I only have one person in the building, and that's not the level we want to provide our
right.
guests. So
it's not about the time; it's about who's on staff. That people
that's
are
right.
on staff.
That's right.
Okay. Now, this would be what I would have wanted to kind of ask the bellhop is like, do you know of like any in things to do there that like when someone comes up and says, you know, can you recommend?
Right.
Do you know all those kind of things?
Yeah, absolutely. Charlotte is really a city that is continuing to grow at a meteoric pace, and right now is a very exciting time in Charlotte for those who want to be in the know and want to do things, because just last week NASCAR's Hall of Fame opened here in town. So never before did NASCAR have its own Hall of Fame and museum, and it's a wildly popular sport. And from what I understand, I haven't had a chance to visit it myself, whether you are a NASCAR enthusiast or not, they have done an incredible job in this exhibit, in this museum, that fan or not, you can go and really enjoy hours of, you know, ton of interactive stuff. They have pit stops that you can perform. You can change tires and see what it would be like to do that. And they've got driving simulations, and apparently it's just an amazing display. On top of which, the face of the museums here in Charlotte has just taken on a whole new look. There is I don't know if you made your way down to the south side of uptown, but the Beckler Museum of Modern Art has just opened. So it's
beautiful.
Pardon me?
What do you think of it? Did you go there?
Unfortunately not, Merle. My time here has been so short that I've been so focused on the property. I do, while I hate that we will slow down a bit over the summer months, I look forward to it, to be able to get out and see and engage a little bit in what Charlotte has to offer, so that I can, A, enjoy it for myself, and B, speak from experience. I always enjoy speaking from experience when making recommendations to guests, as opposed to from what I've heard.
I found, by the way, that it was like, for the amount of space, I guess, you know, going from one floor to another, it was like four floors. I expected a lot more. It's like there was this, you know, something on the, you know, on the lobby level.
Right.
Then you went to the next floor, and there was just this something like in the middle that you looked at.
So it was a little sparse?
Kind of like looked around to see, oh, well, there's no more, that's it. Okay.
Right.
I go to the next floor. But it wasn't until I got on the fourth floor when there was more of gallery.
Interesting. Well, perhaps since it's so new, they're still rounding out their collection. I'm not sure. It's only been open for a few months now, so I'll have to dig into that a little and see if they have intentions to expand their collection. But also a great thing to do in Charlotte is we have here the Blumenthal Center for the Performing Arts, which is a world-class theater. They have a number of different size theaters. It's where the Charlotte Symphony plays. It's where the opera runs. It's where the Broadway performances are. So that is actually right across the street. We are the closest hotel to the Blumenthal Center. So we are often having guests come into town. Jersey Boys ran recently, and that was a big hit, and they do concerts there as well. Another new museum that has just opened right across from the Beckler is the Harvey B. Gantt Center for African American Arts and Culture, which is a beautiful new museum that has opened, which pays tribute to African American music, dance, theater, visual art, film, all of those contributions to the community. So that's another unique offering that Charlotte has. And then, you know, it depends on if you want to stay uptown or venture out. There's a beautiful Arboretum in town. Freedom Park is a wonderful place to spend an afternoon. Certainly, if you're a race fan, there's the NASCAR events at Lowe's Motor Speedway. In the fall, we have the Carolina Panthers football games over at Bank of America Stadium, which is a short walk from the Dunhill. So a great weekend that we get a lot of people doing is coming in for, you know, Friday, Saturday nights and taking in a show and a nice dinner, perhaps a brunch on Sunday, and then a little tailgate before the football game on Sunday. So there's really no shortage of things to do. I'm a New Yorker originally. I don't know if I mentioned that. And I moved to Raleigh about 4 years ago, and Raleigh is North Carolina's capital city, and it's Raleigh's more of a let's say a small town, whereas Charlotte is a far more it's far more of a metropolis, I would say. It's a small big city is a good way to describe it.
Yeah, I found that Raleigh was like very you know, enough of an area to go around and whatever, because I did a tour on the Segway tour.
Oh, sure, of downtown Raleigh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but it's kind of like very Capitol building looking.
Well, that's the thing about Raleigh, is that Raleigh's downtown, while growing, is not really the heart of Raleigh. Raleigh being known often as the Triangle with RTP, the Research Triangle Park, and Durham and Chapel Hill, there's so much to do in the Triangle area that branches out way beyond the city of the downtown area of Raleigh. So while there are some museums and performance spaces in downtown, there's a lot from a standpoint of museums and beautiful parks and opportunities to take in concerts and sporting events and so on and so forth in and around Raleigh. We have a number of properties in the Triangle as well. I mentioned that Summit Hospitality is a Raleigh-based company, so we have some wonderful hotels in Durham and Chapel Hill and in Raleigh, as well as at the beach in Wilmington and Wrightsville Beach, which is, I don't know if you made it all the way out to the coast on your North Carolina travels, Merle, but Wrightsville Beach and Wilmington is a beautiful area.
I got a lot more of North Carolina to visit.
I think you do, yeah.
I'll have to curb that until next year.
Yeah.
I also went to a place, the Levine Museum.
Yes, the Levine Museum of the New South. Mm-hmm.
That was good. I have to use the word. I hate to use the word interesting, but you know, I didn't know what to expect, and it was worth going to.
Yeah, I've heard that. I haven't had the opportunity to visit yet, but it's certainly on my list of places to see. It's only two blocks from the Dunhill, so it's a convenient walk over there.
Yeah, because one of the things, I guess it, well, I'm not sure if it's a permanent thing, but I think it was a changing places. I think the way it's kind of set up is so you could see how the South was changed, and also having to do with South and the African American culture, and then going into with this thing they have called Changing Places, has to do with just showing the various groups that came
right.
into the area, and so that was pretty good. Is there any place that you know of when I say in other words, like, other than like the touristy places, is there anything you've heard from people that have told you about some place, oh, you got to go there, not everybody knows about it?
Usually that, at least here, refers to some of the local restaurants and places to get, you know, for example, Price's Chicken Coop is said to have the best fried chicken, not just here in Charlotte, but possibly in the world. They've been rated, you know, by Gourmet Magazine and the like as the place to go for fried chicken. There's often places, I think the locals are often proud of their food as opposed to necessarily the sites, because always tourists do seem to find those. Charlotte has a growing local farming community as well. So there's some great farmers markets in and around the Charlotte area that people really enjoy. I would encourage people too, if they're in the region, Salisbury, North Carolina, which is only about 45 or 50 minutes outside of Charlotte, is a beautiful historic town. If I'm not mistaken, they have the largest number of registered historic places of anywhere in the Southeast, and a lot of that are beautiful old historic homes and such. And one thing too, and while I'm speaking of the historic angle, is just two blocks from here at the Dunhill is the historic Fourth Ward, which has it's a neighborhood of Victorian homes that were built anywhere from the 1830s, I believe, through the 1880s. That a number of which have been preserved and are just in beautiful condition, and the streets are cobblestone and they're tree-lined, and it's just a charming neighborhood. And you wouldn't know it was there unless someone told you it was two blocks away. You have to kind of cut through this little park, and it's off to a side street. So amongst all these big towers here in Uptown Charlotte, the historic Fourth Ward is nestled in there, and it's just lovely.
But you don't have I didn't even know. Did you have a restaurant at the hotel?
We do. Monticello is our restaurant here at the hotel.
Oh, okay. Because I wasn't scheduled to go there. Now my brain is going, Was there a restaurant?
I hope you had breakfast with us, Merle. We do everything incredibly well, but we are often recognized as having one of the best breakfasts in town.
Yes, I did have breakfast. Now I remember.
Okay.
Everything, got bought.
They all blend together, huh?
From all the places I went to, now I realize, yes, that I did. That I had breakfast there, and I purposely, because I wanted to make sure I had all the local things.
Right.
And not just, I'll be looking, actually, I'll probably look at my blog, but I keep a diary with me as I travel, and I'll probably look there and probably wrote down exactly what I ate as well. And they do dinner, I guess, right?
We do breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Monticello. We do a wonderful brunch on the weekends as well.
Cool. Anything special that you have for brunch?
When in Rome, they say, right? We have a wonderful shrimp and grits, which is a real southern specialty. Our chef, Chris Jakubczak, does a fantastic job with andouille sausage and over creamy grits. It's just delicious. So that he also has a just not necessarily a southern specialty, but he does a fantastic stuffed French toast, fresh berries stuffed in French toast. That's just a delightful dish. We do our fresh squeeze juices every day and have a wonderful selection of teas and coffee. It's really a great location here in Uptown for the weekday visitor to find a quiet spot for a breakfast meeting, and for the weekend traveler and or the locals in that, actually in that Fourth Ward neighborhood I mentioned just around the block, come in and have a leisurely brunch with us as well. If they're in the mood for a mimosa or a Bloody Mary, we do a great job with those as well.
One of the, by the way, one of the nice things about your hotel that I thought was pretty cool was that if you, let's say you're coming into town, you're not, and you didn't, you know, like you're going to visit and you didn't expect to stay in town, and you go, oh my God, I don't have a toothbrush, I don't have a this.
Right.
You got everything there.
We try to anticipate our guests' needs, and sometimes that means having one of everything. So we make a point of allowing our guests to be worry free. So if something is a possibility that they might have left it behind, we like to have it on property so as to be able to deliver it at their request.
Yeah. And it was like you have toothpaste, toothbrush, comb, shaving cream, razor,
mm-hmm.
men's deodorant, women's deodorant.
Yep.
Sewing kit, you know, just soap, shampoo, mouthwash. I mean, it's really a great idea, I must say.
No, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. I also, I'm looking at my my diary here and totally forgot. Did I go to Discovery Place there?
Yes, you did. You absolutely did. They're just completing a incredible renovation. Discovery Place is a children's science museum that's right across the street from the Dunhill. Actually, we've had their renovation teams and designers staying with us over the course of the last 6 months or so, and they are about 95% complete and going to be holding their reopening gala, although they're open, but they're holding a celebration here in a few weeks, not here at the Discovery Place. We have a lot of them staying with us on June 25th, I believe.
There's a lot of cool stuff that we were playing.
It's a wonderful museum. I brought my three-year-old son there a few weekends ago, and he couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I have a couple of things up on my YouTube for people to see.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah, and also I got to see a 3D movie.
Ah.
I love watching 3D movies. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm one of those people who, you know, as it looks like it's coming towards me, my hand goes out there to see if I can touch it.
Right.
I know I can't, but it's like, you know, you know,
it's fun to try.
Yeah, fun to trust. Anyway, you know, but that's a great place. So what I like is the hotel is great. It has a great location.
It does, yes.
The things that are around there that are just, you know, just walkable within a couple of blocks or so,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. And you know, as you said, like within a certain radius, you got the taxi cab.
Yes, we've never had anyone ask us to drive them or pick them up from Discovery Place, though. It's right across the street.
No, I can't imagine that would happen. So.
Right.
But so, is there anything else you want to like share with us?
Just that you know, really, the Dunhill is a property that I'm very proud to be associated with. It's a charming, unique, historic property in a great location, the corner of Tryon and Sixth in Uptown Charlotte. And as you pointed out or alluded to with folks like Anthony, our bellman here, we just have a wonderful, gracious group of ladies and gentlemen who work for us, who take great care and pay a tremendous amount of attention to detail and make certain that anyone who walks through our doors is welcomed and enjoys a warm and inviting experience. So, Charlotte's a great city. I am its newest resident of about 4 weeks, and I think it's a wonderful place to visit. So,
great.
I hope to see lots of folks soon.
Okay. Well, and I guess is their website?
www.dunhillhotel.com. And again, my name is Craig Spitzer. I would certainly be ready, willing, and able to talk to and work with arranging travel plans for any of your listeners. So feel free to give me a call. We have an 800 number listed on the site as well. We look forward to welcoming you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing everything with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Merle. Thanks again. We look forward to seeing you back here soon.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a good evening.
Bye now.
Bye. Yeah, so, well, in a couple of years I'll go back. It's not that I don't want to go back. You know, I have all the places I have to get to. Anyway, so it's not like I got much time. I'm going to end the show now. I'm hungry. Barbara's hungry. I'm thirsty. I didn't talk too much, Barbara, about food at this point. Listen, you know, I mean, it was really only the beginning part that I did. When I get off, I'm gonna give a call to McCormick and Schmick's and see what happened to Brian. But at least I got people drooling, I think, from just talking about the food. So, again, I don't know. Next week I'll have a couple of things. I haven't decided when I'm going to do the show, but it'd probably be from New York City. So until then, everybody, have a great day, evening, morning, or whatever it is. With you, and don't call me.